Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop
addicted to the shindig. Yeah, very good morning to you, and welcome along to Kane and Bucks. It's good to be here. We're fired up.
Are you there, Kane?
Well, I'm here. I think my microphone is on. That sounds a little bit better, but it's very good morning to you. We'd love your thoughts this morning, as always. The Mimosa Homes open line. You can get that ringing straight away, 1-300-736-736, because we have a very big McCafe menu. They're our official coffee partner. The buck stops here out of 7 o'clock in its usual position every Monday. The Essendon vice captain are pretty good. The Bombers are pretty good. Andrew McGrath had a stack of the footy. He's going to join us. Sammy Edmund with the latest news, and there's no shortage of that, as is the case on most Mondays. And questions without notice, give us one of those if you've got one. The seven-time All-Australian, the Norm Smith medalist, the Collingwood champion, the Australian Football Hall of Famer, the Brownlow medalist alongside of me, Nathan Buckley. Just rolls off the tongue, Bucks.
You don't even need to read it anymore.
Pretty basic bloke.
No, yeah, and, correct. And an expert in all things hamstring injuries, which we found out prior to the program this morning on the back of Brennan Cox and Bucks' initial diagnosis. Good morning.
I heard you were talking about a thing, like... like words that would wear with an A in front of it that indicate something else. I think Brennan Cox might have had an avulsion. So he might.
Avulsion.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit of tendon involvement off the bone. That was ugly. And not, I mean, what a great win by the Dockers, but they had an ACL, a really bad concussion, and then a really bad hammy injury. And Cox is going to be a pretty important player for them. But how'd you feel watching 9 games of footy over the weekend? Like that ramped up, that escalated quickly, didn't it?
People often say you work a lot, and I say back, it's not the actual on air time. It's the off-air time that gets you.
Prep.
It's a lot of time, like, to fit in. Not that you watch all 9.
I wanted to try and get to all of them. I didn't get a lot of the St Kilda Geelong game, and I was fascinated by that game, but I found myself, I wanted to see the Gold Coast again.
Yep.
So I watched a bit more of the Gold Coast Adelaide game, but yeah, it's...
Well, sometimes it's hard for you because you'll be doing a game on a Saturday and there's another game going on. Or like last night I was doing the Gold Coast game, so you don't see a whole lot of the other game that's been played at the same time. And then last night I was just sort of drifting off with the Fremantle game. Apologies to the Dockers because I thought that was the win of the round, but consumed most of the first half and didn't see a lot of the second half because I was nodding off. But it's back in a big, big way. And there's a lot to talk about, Bucks, because the two grand finalists are 0-2, would you believe? That's a start.
Well, it's never happened before.
No.
Which is interesting in itself, but we'll get to that. Like, that's the hard-nosed stuff. But the big question I want to know is, how's your training going for this boxing game?
Oh, my goodness.
This boxing match.
It's been...
You're looking buff, by the way.
Stressful. Like, no, physically I'm good.
Have you put a few kgs on?
Put a few kgs on. Been drinking a lot of... protein shakes, let me tell you.
Okay.
Much. Creatine, I've been loading up on the creatine.
And like, so tell me where you get, I know you don't be giving too much to your opposition, but where do you get sore? Where are you sore? Like when you
feet,
do the boxing
your
training?
Feet.
Your feet?
Yeah, my feet.
On your toes all the time?
No idea how sore your feet get, like, and blisters and like red raw on the sort of balls of your feet because you're bouncing a lot. It's been a really interesting challenge mentally and physically, like to actually get into the ring with someone. I've always admired boxers forever. And there was a few things I said to myself that I'd never do. One is jump out of a plane.
Yeah.
One is
Scuba. Have you done that yet?
No.
No.
One is scuba dive. I've
done both those.
Petrified of scuba diving for some reason. Sharks, and also just the thought of being underwater and not having any air. But if you run out or you get lost or you're in a cave or something, I don't know. And the other one was sort of jump in the ring and box someone. But I've been doing that a little bit. And
out of those three things, I'm surprised you chose to box someone.
it's been really good, but I haven't enjoyed it. Can I say that? I haven't. No, it's been.
It's only a couple more weeks to go, mate. A
couple more weeks, and we'll get in there and we'll have a bit of fun. But it's not really about us. It's about the. I think there's five pro fights on the night that'll be worth definitely going along to see.
I'm over there. Do you need a cut guy?
A cut man. Yeah.
I'm in there. If you need me, I'm there. All right.
I think I'm sorted.
How do you reckon Daisy Thomas and Dane Swan are going to handle it?
I reckon
we'll see Apollo Creed and Rocky, like they'll be throwing heads back as if,
like fake.
They'll be hamming it right.
Well, you would have seen them. Can they both box?
No. Daisy would generally just take the piss out of it whenever he was in the boxing ring. Swanee would do a little bit.
He looks good, Dane Swan. Like with his technique, I've just seen him shadow box a little bit in the promotional stuff.
Looking at the card, like I know Anthony Rocco and have seen him. You know, obviously, I know how he goes with the gloves on, and he's actually got some really good fundamentals, apparently. Like our boxing coach is. Has worked on that for a fair while. So I saw Corey McKernan, and he looks fit and ready to go. So it's amazing what it does to you. Like that pride, the pride factor would be one, and not wanting to get your head beaten in was probably the other one.
Well, that's it. Even like I work with Brownie, and he's sort of said he dropped 6 kilos. So it's been good, but we'll get in there. We're wearing big gloves, so sort of 20-ounce gloves. They're like big pillows, so hopefully.
Yeah, who else? Who's chosen? Did Mitch Robinson and Pettifer, have they chosen you for the little gloves?
Well, we had the meeting, and they were sort of explaining what their expectations is, get in there and have a bit of fun. You know, safety is obviously pretty important, and then Mitch Robinson's gone, I know you guys are wearing the 20-ounce gloves, but do you mind if we wear 10s? Like, he's just mad.
What? Yeah.
He's mad. But they're actually...
So
I think
that one could be finished pretty
quick.
Well,
he wants to... I think he wants to do it more seriously, Mitch Robinson. I think he wants to actually have a real crack at being a professional boxer after this. So this is his first sort of dipping the toe in the water. Certainly not for me.
Is there enough money in it?
Yeah. There's
for a one-off?
Yeah, I think so. Yep. A bit like you going to the jungle, I think.
Nah, probably not like that at all.
Okay, we'll move on. Hey, did you get heckled in the crowd the other night?
Oh, I got booed by the Collingwood supporters.
Booed by the Collingwood supporters?
Yeah, it's happened again.
Your favourite thing is booing.
Yeah, I love it. No, there was a... We're just sitting at our new commentary digs, and Channel 7 have got one over there, and Fox have got one here. We're on level 2, just at the top of N52 on the second level. A lady walked in about half an hour before the game started, turned around to us and says, "Boo, you're in our bar." So these studios, they're on-site studios, and they're awesome. They're great view, great spot. Got heckled and booed because where they have been built used to be a bar area.
Right.
And there was a bloke, Collingwood bloke, about 15 minutes into the third quarter, sort of like, and things were going south. Turned around and said, "And I can't even go to the bar. This is shit." He was losing it. And he was looking at it. And he actually went and sat back down. it was not a great night for Pies fans on Friday night. But no. And what's more, the people in our general vicinity, they didn't have their bar to go and
are they going
to
feature in the Buck Stops?
Take the edge off
the Pies.
Yeah, they do with the Lions. I mean, I think that is a story. But geez, we love to. We're two games into a 23 game season. They end up playing 23 games, so we're quick to go. But I mean, both of them, the signs are not great for different reasons. But yeah, welcome to 2024. It's not.
Well, we knew this, didn't we? Everyone was saying before the start of the season how even it is going to be. So if Brisbane turn up against Fremantle in Perth and they're not quite there, that you will lose. So the really only teams that you're going to have an easy win against, and West Coast will win a couple of games, is the Eagles, from what I saw yesterday. North will surprise a few.
That game itself, like North, they were put under the same pressure that Collingwood were put under the week before, and it looked to me like North really stood up, yeah, through that late part of the first quarter and into the second. In the end, GWS's power was too significant for them to be able to cope with, but the young blokes had a real crack.
All right, the Temper Text is firing up early, which we love. Very disappointed Dogs member. Don't understand why Bevo didn't put Norton back after halftime yesterday. Same old story with the Dogs, says Troy. He's in Ballarat. We will definitely discuss the Western Bulldogs this morning. One game, but it's more than that. It's a pretty large sample size over a number of years now that the Western Bulldogs get beaten the same way when they get beaten, and that was the case against Melbourne. Yesterday, Corn, what a beautiful world we live in. Giants, Swans and Suns on top, and the Pies stone motherless last, says Gary. Corn, it would be remiss of you not to mention how well Clayton Oliver is going at the moment, and maybe, just maybe, things aren't as bad at the Melbourne Football Club as most of the media have been reporting over the past 4 months, says Jason in Hoddleberg. Well, we are doing the sixth of the best, six best performances over the weekend, and let me tell you, Jason, Clayton Oliver is going to feature in that.
Yeah, I think just the same way as the predictions that pundits have made leading into seasons can be debunked. We see, obviously that was a Melbourne supporter that was pretty keen on their D's win on the weekend.
One of the Melbourne supporters who was there, because there weren't many there.
So that's a fair point. So 418,000 spectators across round one, which was set up to have that headline, given that we thought we could do that. There weren't a lot at the GWS North Melbourne game, and I suppose that's putting those two together was probably saying, well, that means that we've got eight games that we think that we're going to draw a little bit more. Melbourne Dogs didn't get quite as many as we normally did. Gold Coast Adelaide didn't get as many as we would have thought. Although Gold Coast, if they continue on their tear, they'll continue to draw more and more. Everyone loves a winner, don't they?
Yes, they do. And just before we move on, because we're going to speak a lot of football, but Xavier Coates, the try for Melbourne Storm.
Yeah.
Let's just have a listen to how it was called on Fox NRL.
Hughes, Pezzett, Pappenhausen, Remus Smith, he goes to Xavier Coates! Can you believe it?
Now, that was how it was done. It's the best rugby league try that I've ever seen. And I've watched it probably 10 times in replay, and I don't even like the sport.
Well, even more so, there's a couple of leaguies, mates of mine, that are up in Sydney saying it's the best finish they've ever seen
really?
A winger make. And I suppose it's context is king, isn't it? So there's your 15 seconds left in the game. If you either do or you don't, the game is on the line. So it's not dissimilar to a shot at goal after. So probably Jamie Elliott from from the 50-meter arc junction with the boundary line a couple of years back. That's the type of finish that we're talking about. You don't get in that scenario that often, but leaping headlong, basically 7/8 of his body out of play but in the air, and the ability to get the ball down before any other part of him touched the ground. It was it was done exceptionally well.
I wish we saw more of it. I just don't see the highlights in league. I just don't see regular highlights.
Well,
very repetitive. But physicality, I love the physicality of it. I don't love it. I admire it.
But how much do you watch it?
Not a lot for that reason.
If you, like the first 5 minutes of the first State of Origin game every year,
that's great.
That's about as, like, I look at those guys and I think there's something not quite right up there. If you're running that hard into a wall of blokes and there's knees and elbows and imagine trying to mitigate against concussion protocols and all of that in NRL. Mm. They're literally running into a brick wall.
Yeah.
And I've forever been fascinated by that. I can sit on the couch and just go, oh my God, that is I'm seeing something amazing because you got blokes that are just running into each other headlong, and the longer the game goes, the toughest, you know, both mentally, physically, players, they stand out. The ones, the hard nuts, they stand out as the game wears on.
So it went international. It went to America, the highlights, and some of the American fans loved it. Others suggested that you see this on a regular Sunday in the NFL.
That's what the
NFL, and they're probably right. You do see not as good as that, but you would see a play similar to that every week in the NFL with a wide receiver catching a touchdown. And the American fans were a bit confused. They actually had to touch the ball down on the goal line, whereas in the NFL, of course, the ball just
crosses. Well, that, and that's the thing with the line. With the pole on the side there to, like, just knock it. Go and hit that straight away. But if Americans are confused by that,
all right,
it's just a different game.
That's Rugby league talk this morning. I promise there won't be any more. We're going to focus on the footy from the weekend. Let me tell you that. We're in the Kogan Mobile Studios. Kogan Mobile's got you covered with 120 gigs for $120 to use across 12 months. Kogan.com. Click an awesome cane of Bucks up and running. It's good to be here with Bucks from Melbourne Airport. Book online for the best rates at melbourneairport.com.au. And we are powered by Kubota. Take on any job with Kubota's mowers, tractors and land pride attachment. Sixth of the best coming up next.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop, addicted to the
shanty. Sixth of the best. Hit the road with Sixth Car and Truck Rental. Visit sixth.com.au to book today.
Time for the sixth of the best performances from the weekend. Hit the road with Sixth Car and Truck Rental. Visit sixth.com.au to book today. Who would you like to give some recognition to?
First one's going to be Matty Rowell.
Again?
Yeah, I think he's... Well, clearly he's had two really good games. He's been involved in two really good wins. He's 20 clearances in the first round, 9 clearances on the weekend. But, geez, every now and then a player comes along, whether it's aerial, whether it's a kicking, whether it's spatial recognition and finding time and space. But then his one word is just, right, me, you. Ball's 3 metres away. It would be fascinating to put him up against any player in the competition in the one-on-one drills that we do in preseason.
So it's your footy superpower, right? It's Nathan Buckley running from 60 metres out from goal and just either sending it home.
Well, Kane Farrell, how good was his? Right, so that's an elite skill that can't be stopped in that circumstance. Matt Rowell, in a contested ball, you put him against anyone in the competition, they're not as low to the ground, they're not as strong, they're not as powerful over that first 2 or 3 steps, they'd be easier to tackle.
So where does he rank?
It's just
the players you've seen. So I always think for that, and we're talking who can win the footy in a phone box. So you're thinking a phone box, the footy's on the ground, who's going to win it? As good as I've seen is probably Dangerfield. Like, I think Dangerfield in that space. And Prime Fife in that area.
Well, I'm going back a bit further.
Yeah.
Like, Gavin Brown was the one for me. Like, if you got him in a one-on-one, he just, like very Dangerfield-like, he'd dive headlong just to get his hands on the ball and drag it back in. And just when you think he's a 1 in 10 chance of being in the contest, he'd go win it.
Yeah.
So they're the ones. I think Rowell is putting himself in that category. He's the modern-day version of those boys, and Dangerfield's been doing it for a while. But, yeah, he's that you will always have stoppages in the game. You will always have contests in the game. And all he needs to do is be in the area, and he's going to be a live chance. And that's why he becomes such a big weapon for the Suns.
All right, who's the best you've seen? 0433981116 of winning that contested footy in tight. I'll let you have the next one at number 5.
Yeah, I've got Sam Taylor. And I'll talk about him out of 7 in Buck stops, actually. You can't speak highly enough of this guy and the competitive attitude that he brings to the Giants.
Yeah,
back
you
half.
Did that call, didn't you? And you were noticing how upset he got when he got a goal kicked on him that had nothing to do with him. One of his dopey teammates just sort of ran into him. The ball spilled out and Larky kicked a goal.
He was not
filthy.
Happy.
Rightly so. I've got Max Scorn at 4. I thought he was enormous, but I want to talk about why he was enormous after 7 o'clock and the lack of tactics against him from the Western Bulldogs. At three, we've got Isaac Heaney. We've seen him do it for a couple of weeks. Now he's been huge to the midfield and he's absolutely flying and leading that Sydney Swans midfield. Archie Perkins at two, well, probably Bombers fans, you let us know his best game in Essendon colours. And it felt like a new era of the Essendon midfield. So no Parrish, no Shield. They left out Hobbs, you know, probably concerned about having a one-pace midfield. But now it's Caldwell, it's Setterfield, it's Perkins, it's Durham, and you've got Merritt in there. It just looked a better balanced midfield, and Todd Goldstein helps as well, Bucks.
Yeah, and we'll ask Andy McGrath about that going into 8 o'clock. I think we've got him at 7.40,
that's
is that
it,
right?
Yep.
So, yeah, looking forward to speaking to him. And he can tell us a little bit about a young bloke like Perkins who's, you know, taking the responsibility on. He played a similar match, you know, 12 months ago against Hawthorn. It was his best game for that year. We're hoping that he progresses on further. The other is the other player we've got here is Caleb Sarong, and most recent, and 46 touches is not something that you take lightly. He was able to work through the game, 25 at halftime, got tagged in the third quarter by Robertson, but was able to maintain, you know, consistent impact on the game. What a great way to start your year.
Fremantle record, 46 touches, 10 clearances, 6 score involvements and 7 tackles. Caleb Sarong was the performance of the weekend. Book car and truck rental was 6 at 6.com.au. We'll quickly sneak in Brendan, who's been waiting patiently. Which teams are going to dominate this year, Brendan?
Good morning, Kono and Bucks. I think we've got to start preparing ourselves for an interstate domination of the final eight this year. I think every team of the interstate sides are going to have a really strong season, and we might be starting to prepare ourselves for maybe 5-6 teams, interstate sides in the top eight.
So we're looking at both Sydney sides. We're not sure about Port Adelaide yet. Not enough evidence to find out how well they're going to go. Brisbane, you think, will bounce back. Not sure about the Dockers. It was a great first up win, but can they do it? So you would think half of the eight is going to be made up of interstate sides. Good on you, Brendan.
Brendan's obviously Victorian.
Brendan's a Victorian.
Because if you're in South Australia, there's a lot of interstate sides.
Bring it on.
No, they've started well, there's no doubt.
Joey is in Point Cook. Couple of nasty injuries over the weekend. Joe, what's your thoughts?
Just my thoughts. Morning, guys, first. Just my thoughts. With all these long-term injuries, I know they're quite unlucky at the moment within the first two rounds, or the zero round and round one. Do you think it's possibly because they haven't got enough pre-season actual games? I know there's a lot of intra-clubs, but obviously playing at their own grounds, not used to the surfaces, maybe bringing back 2-3 weeks the ANZAC Cup or the Community Shield that they had previously. Do you reckon that could help them so the players are getting adapted to the MCG surfaces, the Gabba, or even off the stadium?
Spoke to Doc Larkins on Friday about this off the back of the Gibcus, and there were some nasty ones in that Thursday game. He just said that the riskiest time for injury is at the start of the year as players adapt to the intensity, and whilst grounds are harder, you're at more risk of doing that. So it's probably not uncommon to have a bit of carnage at the start of the year before players start to acclimatise.
Yeah, it's such a fine line because you're playing, like, the intensity ramps up so much in the first couple of rounds. And I don't know what the studies show, but I would suspect that majority of major injuries happen in these first 2 or 3 rounds of the year. And that's definitely something that we considered at Collingwood. Mm. And you just had to make sure you played the players that were most prepared, because if you took a risk, and I know Cox hadn't missed a lot of that pre-season, and he's come in, you're asking him to play the Billy Frampton role against Harris Andrews, and you don't have to run that much, mate, but just lock him away. But it is a risk. And when you're trying to chase these points and you're trying to chase the wins early, you can make some decisions that are compromised. And mostly you get away with them. 95% of the time you get away with them. But, you know, we're seeing ACLs, we're seeing some serious injuries. It's a shame to see, but it's an inevitability when you play at this, at that level on the red line.
We'll quickly sneak in Steve before the news headlines. Steve, who's the best contested midfielder you've seen? We'll get back to Steve shortly.
Got a few others.
Patiently.
Others here that got thrown up. Oliver, Libba, Tom Green, Sammy Mitchell back in the day, Vossi, Butters, but I reckon Butters would want it to go another 2 or 3 metres away from Matty Rowell and Jack Viney, obviously, who's won. But there's a few that have been thrown up by our listeners. So
keep them coming through, 0433 98 11 16. It's news time. We're off to the Mick Cafe for a coffee.
A sports update for Keyser. Sitting on the sidelines? Get back in the game with Keyser Physiotherapy, Rehabilitation and Strength Training.
All right, the sports updates for Keyser. Tired of pain, time to try Keyser. There were some surprises with the MRO for me as this filtered through last night or yesterday afternoon. James Sicily, Mason Redmond and Malcolm Roses have been handed one-match suspensions by the MRO for incidents over the weekend. Sicily's been given a game for kicking our guest this morning, Andrew McGrath, so we'll ask him clearly his thoughts on that. Redmond got a week after George Hewitt was let off for a very similar incident for striking Jai Newcombe, and Roses for headbutting Max Michelani. I missed that one. Grian Myers escaped a sanction for throwing at Rowan Marshall's shoe.
Yeah, I wonder where that sat in the matrix. The tribunal matrix.
Yeah, that was... He shouldn't have done that.
No, he shouldn't have, but we've seen it before. Did Jimmy Steins wore a hat and got ripped in half at some point? Like, these things happen, but I think that's just a little bit of tomfoolery. Melbourne United actually clinched the game one of the 2024 grand final series in the NBL with an emphatic 104-81 win over Tasmania, who just keep coming, at John Cain Arena. They've taken a 1-0 series lead. Game two will be played at Tasmania on Friday night.
Yep, Yep, in the Premier League, West Ham and Aston Villa have played out a 1-1 draw overnight, meaning Villa now hold a 3-point gap on Tottenham for fourth spot. It comes after Ange's side went down to Fulham 3-0 yesterday.
In the FA Cup quarterfinals, Manchester United defeated Liverpool 4-3. Chelsea defeated Leicester 4-2. And Manchester City defeated Newcastle 2-0.
All right. And if you want to have your say on the MRO findings as well, we'll definitely let you have your say on that. But just your initial thoughts on the Sicily one, because you had some thoughts off there.
Yeah, I just think if you get found guilty of kicking, it's like... If you haven't kicked someone, it's a zero. If you kick someone, I'm thinking it's at least a month. If you have a look at it, it's minimal. Mm. So I don't know if there's enough contact.
None.
There.
Bucks. But that's not a suspendable offence.
No, but that's the thing. So one for kicking just makes no sense to me. It makes no sense.
So it's either one or it's four.
Well, zero or four.
Okay.
I just can't, like, if you found someone guilty of kicking, they're getting a month. It's a dog act. It's not something that you would foster at all. It's not a slap on the wrist if you get found guilty of kicking, and that's what's happened.
All right. In live golf, Xander Schauffele and Wyndham Clark lead the Players' Championships in the final round, both 17 under through six holes. Jason Day, the best place Aussie at 9 under. I've never been more loaded with people or things, clubs, that need to pull their socks up.
Really?
Yeah. So we're going to do that next. 1-300-736-736. Who needs to pull those socks up nice and high after the weekend?
The Matty Rowell conversation has got him coming.
What do you got?
Glenn Archer. And yes, he's a Glenn Archer type with the way that he attacks. Although Glenn Archer was more an aerial player. Atkins, Job Watson's getting thrown at Ben Cunnington. Josh Kennedy, but imagine this is what I love about the game. So you've got a player here who's got an elite skill. Like, I would watch the Suns games to see who they're going to put up against him. Horn Francis would be interesting. Rowell, Horn Francis, Libber and Rowell when he gets going. Like, they're just these little battles within the battle. I think that's what footy's all about.
And Andy off the temper text. Cornsy, quick question, and I'd love for you to say this on air. You keep talking about how good our list is, in brackets the Western Bulldogs. I was there yesterday and it was nothing short of embarrassing. I would love for you to name me 10 A-graders that you seem to think we have. The club is an absolute rabble, says Andy. Well, no club has 10 A-graders, but I will name you a lot of very good footballers, talented footballers that the Western Bulldogs have on their list on the other side of this. But speaking of pull their socks up, they will feature as well. If you've got one for us, 1-300-736-736. We'll do that next.
Thanks, Corn.
That sports update was for Supergroups. From one ton to eight ton. Supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop addicted to the
shinsen. Pull up your socks.
You could have run and intercepted that first goal.
I'm so done with this team.
So get out there and attempt to do as I ask.
If you don't want to defend, grab your bag and walk out.
Pull up your socks. For all-day comfort, everyday quality and everyday style. It has to be All-Day Socks by Underworks.
Sam at the team at Underworks will sort you out. Pull up your socks. Who needs to pull them up nice and high? 1-300-736-736. Bucks, why don't you start?
Yeah, I'm going to start with boundary umpires. Not them, because their socks are always up nice and high. But there was one particular decision there, I think with Waterman.
Yes.
Looked like it was out.
Looked like it was out.
Yeah, like from my lounge.
Looked like
from my couch. Was that a field umpire that was running behind him, 31?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's not allowed to make the
Apparently
call.
Apparently not.
That's bizarre.
So pull your socks up for the rules.
Yeah, we need to adjust that. But the other part that has crept in is the criticism of boundary umpires and how far they throw the ball in. Now they are coached and asked to throw it in 18 metres. Newsflash, they don't hit the mark all the time. Mm. Sometimes it'll be 16.8, sometimes it'll be 19.5. But in the end, it's within 3 or 4 metres, and you do have a bad one and it gets recalled.
Yep.
But 18 metres is what the boundary umpires are coached to throw the ball into. And the ruckmen need to adjust accordingly. Some of them don't like to give away front spot, the ruckmen. But I think we just need to recognise that it's not the boundary umpire who throws it short of ruckman half. Most of the time, it's the ruckmen that are starting back further because they don't want to give away front
yeah,
position.
Yeah, so pull your socks up to the boundary umpire who couldn't see the ball in the crowd yesterday. But on the flip side, pull your socks up to the dopey ruckman. And I mentioned this on Classified on Monday. They are. They start 40 metres back and the ball's going, to your point, I wasn't aware, 18 metres out.
So, you call Matty Primus dopey?
Yeah, they're all dopey. Like, okay. If you want to start 40 metres back from a ruck throw-in and the ball lands 5 metres in front of you, that's your fault. And all
Correct.
Of them are doing that.
The irony of that is that Brody Grundy was always a player who didn't want to take front spot.
Mm, none of them do.
And
really.
But in round zero, or opening round against Max Gorn, he was coached and was very keen on getting front spot against Max Gorn. It was a really effective tactic for him. So Dean Cox has obviously been one of the elite rucks of his generation, and I think he and Brody Grundy might be a good combo.
Mm, all right, Paul, I've just seen a bit of this seeping into commentary and analysis over the weekend that the teams that had poor years last year, and when looking at West Coast mainly, I don't want to hear that was a brave effort, okay? I don't want to hear, oh, geez, West Coast were brave today. West Coast are an elite football team with a lot of resources. The least they can do is bring effort, okay? So that is a given, okay? Can we just say with the Eagles, let's not commentate that they gave effort today and they were brave. They laid 35 tackles and they could not stop Port Adelaide's defensive transition. So if you hear anyone suggest that a team, could be North, could be West Coast, was brave today or they gave effort, pull your socks up, because that's the least you can do in an elite competition, and that should be a given. So pull your socks up there to a little bit of the analysis over the weekend. Troy's on the line. You want to speak about the away teams, Troy?
Yeah, morning, boys. The AFL footy department need to pull up their socks. Geelong opened a new stand at their home ground and the team's told to wear away shorts. Every photo in the history of the club will be compromised.
Not something that's ever got me that upset is what shorts teams wear.
No, but I can understand how supporters...
Will the photos be compromised because they're in a different colour shorts or...
Yeah.
No, will anyone
we've
look
seen,
back
We've
and go,
seen different coloured Guernseys over the years, but no, look, it's a small thing, but it's definitely something
Does
that
anyone
look at
the
Troy's not happy
premiers
with.
Premiers and whoever lost the coin toss to wear whatever Guernsey it is or whatever shorts and say, oh, it takes a bit away from our premiership because we were wearing white shorts on that day?
Nah,
I don't think
diminished.
So. I don't think so. Richard, who needs to pull their socks up?
Yeah, Yeah, well, Marshall and the umpire stopping play for Marshall to put his boots on. I mean, he lost his boots on the other side of the field. Tilly threw them off the field because they were a tripping hazard. The runner picked it up, jogged it halfway to Marshall, gave it to Marshall. Instead of putting his boots on, he's waving down to the umpire, "Hey, stop it for me, stop it for me." Runs over, gets involved in the play and goes, "Oh, well, I can't put my boots on." Throws it on the ground for people to trip over again. And so, rightly, Grime Myers throws his boots away and says, "Get that crap out of here." And then the umpire says, "Oh, no, 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 we'll hold it up for you to put your boots on. You can't be throwing it away." He shouldn't have brought it over to begin with. Right. He's a grown man. Put his boots on.
Pull your socks up to Rowan Marshall for losing his boot.
There is something there. Like, we stopped the game now for injured players. Like, that was never, if you copped a knock, unless you were in the middle of the play or it was a serious injury, play didn't stop.
Fair game.
And when you lost your boot, you remember how frustrating that was? Like, the game would be going on around you, or you'd either be running around with like one boot on getting a wet sock, or
I got to say,
never happened here.
My boot never fell off.
I used to tie them up so tight.
My dad was big on that.
And used to wrap them with the electrical tape. Yeah. Well, the electrical tape was no good because the ball would slip off it, but the elastoplast stuff was good.
All right, Frank, who needs to pull their socks up?
Hey, g'day, boys.
Who you got?
Frank.
A friendly boo to you, Bucks, too.
friendly boo.
You're a disgrace, Frank.
The one that really disappointed me to really need to pull their socks up was St Kilda's kicking the position. It was atrocious. I don't know how many times they had big opportunities and they turned it over to the opposition. They could have been right in that game if they kicked. I can probably kick about six times where they were bringing in the forward line and they were kicking it straight to bloody Geelong. It was a disgrace. They need to pull their socks up.
Fair point. I reckon St Kilda would be a bit disappointed not being in that game earlier, and Adelaide the same against Gold Coast. So it's two sides that came home late, but too little too late, and you just don't get them back. You don't get those opportunities.
Frank, hope you love your golf because you've won a $100 voucher from Adidas Golf. The new Tour 360 24 golf shoe is available now at adidas.com.au. You're with Kane and Bucks this morning.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop
addicted to the shit. We've got a huge show today. Thanks for joining us, and it's a very good morning to you, of course. Pull up your socks, and there's heaps coming through. It was for All Day Socks by Underworks. They're the comfiest socks ever, and the weather's been hot. It's for City Power. Message from United Energy: be prepared for extreme weather. Sign up to SMS outage alerts at unitedenergy.com.au/notify. 32 once again in Melbourne. Sunny, of course, as always in Adelaide. 30 and sunny and 25 in Hobart.
Well, the extreme weather looked to have an impact on the games on the weekend.
Definitely.
And, like, obviously the humidity up in the northern states in the opening round. But then, the heat through, on the MCG. You see teams going to do their quarter-time huddles in the shade. Mm-hmm. So that definitely had an impact. But you've trained all summer for it. So, as you would know, the fittest, most prepared players and teams are the ones that are awarded.
Well, I said yesterday, so we get into the Sunday footy show for a meeting at 8, and we chuck around ideas as you would on the couch tonight and all the shows. And I said, tell me if I'm being pedantic here, fellas, because I can be a little bit from time to time, but I do like the one percenters and the preparation and all that. So you've just said teams are going in the shade, they'd be doing ice vests. You know, some clubs in the past, you go to Darwin, you sit in a freezer. I said, if it's 30 at the MCG and you choose to wear a long sleeve Guernsey, like, are you fully serious? Because Ginnivan started,
man, Ginny.
He started on fire, like 9, and he was kicking goals, he was setting up goals. Didn't see him after half time. And the people that I spoke to who were there on the boundary line working for, I don't know, SEN or 3RW said that he was cramping severely after half time. It's a one percenter, but like, is that ridiculous to wear a long sleeve jumper in 30 degree heat at the MCG and not touch it after half time?
I'm not a scientist, Kane.
But
I don't know.
It couldn't help, could it?
I don't know if he was able to cool his body down
correct?
Less because of the long sleeve Guernseys, but logic would suggest that, yes, that okay. is it. It might even be a half percent.
A half percent. All right. They laughed at me yesterday. They said, oh, what about Tucky? And what about Hurdy and all these players that wore yeah, long sleeve jumpers?
Oh, there were some legends that did it, whether they did it at 32 degrees. I think that there was a text here that suggested that Michael Tuck actually cut his sleeves off halfway through one of the grannies because it was hot.
Did he really?
Yeah, so that's...
All right. Hey, we're loaded. So my favourite part of the week is the buck stops here.
Of course it is.
It is. It's coming up next on the McCafe menu there, our official coffee partner. We've got Andrew McGrath, the vice-captain of the Bombers. We've got Sammy Edmund with all the latest news. We've got questions without notice. And most importantly, we've got your calls, 1300 736 736, on the Mimosa Homes open line next.
The buck stops here. For supergroups. From 1 ton to 8 ton, supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators.
Righto, we're going to jump into this nice and quickly. The Pies and the Lions, I don't need to separate them because they're in the same boat, 0 and 2, and they're even using each other as an example of how things can drop off really quickly. But both the coaches have had to front the press after losses that they weren't expected to have, and they realise that there's a fair bit of work to do.
Yeah, we win 3 finals by less than a goal. We're not thinking that we're miles ahead of anyone. That was never our language. You know, the reality is it's a very tough competition, and we've got to keep improving ourselves.
It's a crazy game, football. You know, Collingwood, who played in the grand final last year, are struggling as well. So we just got to find a way.
Just hiccup there over struggling, saying that Collingwood are struggling as well. Yeah. Didn't really want to use it, which indicates that he feels that his team is struggling. And that this just shows you how marginal the game is. We shouldn't be surprised. They were the best teams of 2023. They played in the grand final 6 months ago. But every team has had the off-season to look at Collingwood first and foremost, but Brisbane, and to unpack how they want to challenge the best teams in the competition. So the Sydney Collingwood game, Sydney work rate and efficiency across the ground was evident versus Collingwood. And if you are just a 1 or 2 steps off, you get exposed, and that's what we've seen. Collingwood would be more worried because it's
just about to ask you that
it's happening in it's ha- who would be more worried?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Collingwood, because they actually They kicked the ball away in the back half in the third quarter, and we haven't seen that for a long time. So some uncharacteristic turnovers in their back half. The defending side of things, I think that'll work itself out. I think Collingwood are a very attacking team in terms of their defence. So if they don't stick that first tackle, and GWS got out against them in the opening round, and Sydney got out against them in round one. So that defence is very aggressive, and if it doesn't come off, you can get scored on heavily end-to-end, and that's what we've seen. Mm. Brisbane, I mean, that's a long road trip. They've got their excuses, a long road trip across to Freo, but Freo were ready for them, and they played particularly well.
Well, they weren't ready early.
No, the
first four, and I thought Fremantle just weren't there. I mean, they had a rush decision. It was a brain fade. They had 2 50-metre penalties. One
Which
of those
hurt.
Cost them a goal. And I thought, gee, that if this keeps going this way, we're going to be saying, gee, they made a mistake extending Justin Longmuir, and the discipline of the players is an issue. So a real credit to the Dockers to really stick in. And from the moment those four were kicked, oh, they were clearly the better team.
Yeah, well, we've got to remember it's a long season. So there's 2 games that they've failed to get the result. Collingwood play St Kilda on Thursday, which becomes a massive must-win game for them to jump into the season. Brisbane have the bye. In 2 weeks' time on Easter Thursday, Collingwood play Brisbane. Mm. So Brisbane won't have a win, and Collingwood are either going to not have zero, be at 0 and 3 or 1 and 2. That like the winner or loser of that game, like talk about a grand final replay with actually repercussions going into the year already. So they're behind the 8 ball and they've got to find a way, but both stacked with talent, and you expect that they will find their mojo at some shape and in some way in the near future. leads me to my second point. Sydney, who have just been a remarkable team in this first 2 weeks. The eight quarters that they've displayed have been huge, and their coach is rightfully very happy with it.
Yeah, it's probably something that's evolved, and the ability to play the blokes in different positions. Yeah, it's been a real positive for us the first few weeks, throwing blokes around in different roles, and they're all embracing that, and that's the key part of it all. They're all embracing it to be able to throw different numbers through the middle, but also half back, half forward. We've got some flexibility to be able to do that at the moment, and the first 2 weeks that's probably been a real strength. So hopefully it continues to be a strength.
No Parker, no Mills, no Adams, even though they didn't have Tay in previous years. But young players have stood up. Heaney, pretty much best on ground both weeks. Warner, in the best players both weeks. Goulden, who was their best player last year, who just continues to go from strength to strength. I love their medium-sized defenders. Blakey's obviously been speculated on and pumped up a lot and adds a great deal to their run and carry. McCartan as the key back, and then Rampion Melican as the mediums.
He's improved, Melican.
He's always been a very strong bodied player. Probably preferred the aerial challenges and as an undersized aerial player. But he's like a Rampy. He can play on the ground as well. And I just think that they're so solid out the back that their runners can go and get the job done from halfback forward. When they're playing their best football, they cover the ground better than any other team in transition, and they're the hardest and cleanest in the little circle.
Best kicking team as well?
They're starting to show that. You know, when you see Heaney, McInerney, Blakey, Goulden's kicking on the weekend was, some of the ones that he hit, 45, 50 metres into a 2x2 metre gap. So his kicking is through the roof. And yes, they're maximising everything that they've got. They're John Longmire's put squads like this together before. We saw one in the early 10s when they ended up going and winning a flag. And playing Sydney in sort of the 12, 13 years, they just covered the ground so much. It was so hard to find time and space when you had the ball, and they seemed to get out on you when they had it. And that's exactly what it looked like on Friday night. So Sydney's in good shape.
I reckon they'll be 7-0. Essendon at the SCG, Richmond at the MCG, West Coast, then a bye, then the Suns at the SCG and Hawthorn before their biggest test will be the Giants in round 8.
Well, ironically, point three for me is Melbourne, and their performance against Sydney in the opening round actually looks okay when you go and see Sydney do to Collingwood what they did. But Melbourne supporters would be rapt after seeing their best players stand up, their system prevail, and Clayton Oliver come through with the goods.
Like every Melbourne supporter, you just watch him in awe, as we've said a lot in the last, 3 or 4 weeks, he's just done a power of work on himself. And the club have been incredibly supportive of Clayton. They've helped him in that process. He's committed to it, and he's just come back a healthy, happy person that's committed to his training and his team. And, we saw today evidence of that. He just wants to be a great teammate. And he did that today. And you can see the connection starting to build between teammates, everyone, supporters. There's a great love for Clayton at our club. And, there's been a bit go on, but we're in his corner and we're behind him, and we want to see it succeed.
Yep, there's been a bit go on. We like to sit here and think that we know everything that Clayton Oliver's done, hasn't done, but a lot of it has been speculated. But more and more, it's nearly a subtext, isn't it, that this narrative of Clayton's coming back from struggles. Now he's clearly been a high functioning. He's had issues that he's been highly functioning through, and he's back there again already. The thing that I loved about it, when interviewed after the game, said, "Like, you look like you're top of the ground, you're running, and you're in the clear." And he said, "No, absolutely not. I've still got a lot of work to do, and there's still going to be challenges for me." So that attitude alone, I'm wrapped for the young man that is Clayton Oliver. We all We don't know what others are going through. He's clearly gone through a bit. He's made some poor decisions, and it's got on top of him. But to see him come back and to be doing what he does, and he's done this year on year on year that we've witnessed, and we've taken it for granted. It's great to see. And as he said, he's still got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, is it a risky period? That would be the I mean, it's always going to be a risky period for him. We love a comeback story, and the support that the crowd showed him was inspirational. But, I mean, his first two performances have been pretty solid. Started on the bench yesterday. The Bulldogs kicked the first two goals, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then he comes back on, and sort of the game sort of changed from when he came on. But
I think we need to separate
He's not there yet.
I think, can we separate it? Like, there's Clayton Oliver, the young man, who...
How can you separate?
We judge the professional. We're looking at the professional. We understand that sometimes the decisions of the person are going to impact the professional, and we believe that that has happened. Clayton Oliver is one of the best footballers and most consistent footballers
has he?
But even that was under question. And his teammates, his best mates, looked him in the eye and said, mate, if you keep doing this, we can't abide by your decisions in our environment. Mm. Like, that's a hard stance to take. But sometimes tough love is everything that someone needs. So, yes, as a professional footballer, and what we saw him do on the weekend on the MCG is awesome. He's been doing that for years. Then there's a secondary part. And he's still going to have his teammates there. He's going to have his family there. And he's got a journey, like even beyond football, that he is trying to get right for himself. And he's learning all the way. So I think that was awesome. And to see and to be one of that, like Gorn, Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, when they get up and going and they beat a midfield of Bontempelli, Liberatore, Treloar, you know, there's plenty of competition there, but they smash them. And that's where the game was won.
Yeah, I got some thoughts on the Western Bulldogs and their tactics a little bit later on this morning, but we'll move on to your point number four, and it's around goal kicking, Bucks.
Yeah, Harry Mackay, and goal kicking is king. If Harry hadn't have done the work on his goal kicking, Carlton could well be 0-2. Mm. Obviously, kicking a goal with a minute to go up in at the Gabba, but Harry Mackay has kicked. He kicked his first goal, the first goal of the game, which was momentum, and you can see the energy that did. He kicked his second at the end of the second quarter to put him in front. He kicked his third early in the third to put him in front. What he is doing is definitely fueling his teammates' belief as much as his own.
Brings it back inside 50, where Mackay did really well against Young and Rioli. Big Harry from 55. Looks straight. It looks good. It looks very good.
That's a big kick.
That is a massive kick.
He ended up having seven tackles. Like, he's a big unit. He ended up having seven tackles, and I've seen an energy in him that we didn't see. So you're diminished when one of the things that you are there to do for your teammates, you don't do in terms of finishing. Now, he doesn't have to finish all the time, but you can see he's worked hard on it. There's a routine. There's a consistency. There's a belief that's starting to form in him. If he hadn't kicked straight in both of those games, they lose them. And that's how significant it has been and why it's been such an issue for such a long time. He's going to have his moments, but, geez, he's been
good early. It's amazing it's taken that long, isn't it? To find a routine, just to find a consistent technique of what you are going to do each time you mark the ball inside 50. Because it was different every time he marked the ball from whatever angle he'd marked it from.
Yeah.
Now he knows, okay, I've marked it from 45 out slight angle. I'm doing this every time. And it sounds so simple, and we've been crying out for it for a long time. But better late than never. And, I mean, you know, we probably didn't bank on Harry being this version of himself and where that can take Carlton to. Who knows? Let's finish off with one of your favourites.
Yeah, I just needed to put Sam Taylor in there. It's like, he wasn't the best player on the ground. I reckon he was the best player in the first 15 minutes. But that's where the game is set up. That's where you're one and one. Like, it becomes really, like, so he and Larky, it was always going to be a great contest to witness and to view. There was going to be an advantage to Sam Taylor potentially with a more dominant midfield, and it sort of panned out that way, especially early. But when you're up against another another one of the best, you know, exponents of his in his position. You've got to set your mark early, and Sam Taylor did that. He took three or four intercept marks and put a fist in a couple of others that he couldn't get to and put them 20 metres away. And his sheer competitiveness and will to be at his best in every contest, to win every contest, it has to emanate through his teammates. So not only have you got a player who's got the talent to do his job, but he's got a will and a desire that's pretty much, like, it's not unmatched, but it's at the top level.
So what you're saying is Buckley's not the player he is if he's not a teammate of Sam Taylor. Because the improvement of him and the rest of the defenders as well. A few times North are trying to exit the footy out of their back 50 and the GWS players are right up the backside. And we've seen the flip side with Collingwood where they're just a metre or two off. Are you saying that because Taylor is their teammate, he's setting an example for the rest?
Absolutely. And I think I would not be surprised if within their four walls that he raises the bar in terms of competitiveness on the training track and expectation. So as we were talking about, he was dirty when Buckley ran into him and the ball spilled and then Larky got a... Like, he had dominated Larky for 40 minutes. And it was interesting. Nick Larky deserves some credit too because he decided to go to the ground game to take Taylor into packs and then he kicked a couple of goals off the ground. And then later on, he took him deep and tried to lead up on him rather than sort of being in the aerial. So Larky's performance I really liked because he tried to change it up. But that's what the best players ask you to do. Sam Taylor took Nick Larky's one wood away and he still tried to find other ways. But I'm just so impressed by what I see from the guy. And I reckon he makes his teammates better around him because he drives a standard of competitiveness that not many do.
The buck stops here for Supergroups. First picked every week for Kubota Excavators, supergroups.com.au.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop
addicted to the show. Oh, Thomas, the kick into play was not good at all. Fruit. Salem cut it off. Pickett handball back to Salem. Here's another one. This is getting ugly now for the Dogs. It's getting mighty pretty if you're a demon.
Yeah, it was pretty ugly for the Western Bulldogs. Now, they often start the season slowly, and most would say, okay, well, it's a small sample size. But is it a small sample size at the Western Bulldogs, or is this been happening for 7 years? That's the question. And is it the same problem? So when you look at the issues that I've had with the Western Bulldogs and the criticism over it, there's a number of things. So the selection issues at the Dogs and getting some continuity with where the players expect to play. I mean, you could argue that with Caleb Daniel and McRae and some others, and whether or not they're in their best 22, you would have to say yes. You look at their inability to stop run-ons. So once again, they concede 5 goals again. And if you go back and look at the teams that have conceded the most goals in a row for the last number of years, I think they're bottom three with West Coast and probably North. So that's a significant issue. They gave up 141 marks, so they refused to defend. So whether Luke Beveridge doesn't rate defence, I'm not sure, but history would say, and you speak to the guys at Champion Data, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but they would be in the bottom of defensive accountability or whatever metric you want to measure defence with for a number of years. 141 marks. And then I look at tactics.
129 uncontested.
So that's the biggest number of the weekend. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I think there was a team at 108. So
yeah, I think Port Adelaide,
that's right, against West Coast.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a simple measure of are you really defending the ground? 120 uncontested marks. And then I look at the tactics around, okay, so what worked the previous week against Melbourne? Well, it was the physicality against Max Gawn. So essentially target Max Gawn. Now, it's not often that teams would target a player, but Gawn has shown he's susceptible to that. Sydney have shown it, Port Adelaide have shown it. You reckon Max Gawn has a bruise on him today? No, he doesn't. Like, he was just running around collecting 26 touches, best player on the ground, and not once did a Western Bulldogs player bump Max Gawn off the ball. So
what happened with Tim English? Did he cop a knock?
He went back with the flight of the ball and copped it. Not a head knock, but a knock. And from that moment, he looked really sore. But he looked out on his feet, so then they moved him forward, English. He actually had a couple of shots at goal, but but missed. But that's the reigning All-Australian ruckman was torched by Max Gawn, who responded really strongly. So once again, it is deja vu with Luke Beveridge and the Western Bulldogs. Let's have a listen to Luke Beveridge about what he his disappointment post match.
The most disappointing part, other than you know, probably them having a dominance in some of their flow at times, was that, you know, we obviously kicked some points at the start of that last quarter. We're well in it, and then for the margin to blow out by another 5 goals, and that's really what we've spoken about post game, is the most frustrating part after, you know, working so hard to get to this point and feeling like we really prepared well for round one. That was the most disconcerting part of the afternoon.
Yeah, I'd love to, for him to say we just don't rate defence, because we allowed Jack Billings to take 15 uncontested... Jack Billings, that'd have to be a career high. 15 uncontested marks, Buck. So what...
Out of 23 touches. So yeah. if you take uncontested marks out of Jack Billings' game, he only has 8 other touches. So that's probably the question. I don't think... there's no doubt that the back six of Western Bulldogs actually, yeah, outside of Liam Jones, actually looks pretty light on for pure defensive talent. So Caulfield and Bramble give you a little bit of bounce. Johannesson definitely gives you a bounce. Karmas is a young player that's still making his way. Richards is probably the closest to that, that competitive aerial ground level player. But it's not a back six or seven that you can allow the ball to go in there. So there's 53 insides. It's not one that you could allow the same access as the opposition and expect to defend quite as well, because it's not a hardened back six or seven that's played a lot of football. The question I've got, so Aaron Norton kicks the first goal of the game and then really doesn't look like he's going to worry the scoreboard after that. Does he go back? Yeah, is Hugo Hagen and Darcy with Lobb, who was quiet again, like, do they do enough forward of the ball to kick a winning score?
It's a question he's been asked a lot, and I mean, they've been reasonably stubborn in that. I think they had a look at it last year for a very brief period of time with Norton, but they've just given him a 9-year contract to be a forward.
They gave him a 9-year contract to be a part of their club.
To be a forward. If they wanted him to be a centre-half back, we would know by now, wouldn't we? Like, how many times has he had the opportunity with their back six and their lack of key defenders to move him back? And they've been stubborn in doing that. So, they will win their next couple, the Western Bulldogs, and they'll be off Broadway for a while and the pressure will dissipate. They'll play Gold Coast in Ballarat. They'll win that. Then it's West Coast and their draw is soft. But don't tell me it's a one-game sample size with the Western Bulldogs. This has been going on for 7 years, and once again, I was watching yesterday going, this is the exact same Western Bulldogs, despite a whole group of new assistant coaches, the same coaches there, and the same issues arise after a full pre-season of reviewing it and trying to address it, and against a good opposition in tough conditions, essentially, they did not want to defend the ground yesterday. That was my thoughts on the Dogs. We're in the Kogan Mobile studio. Kogan Mobile's got you covered with 120 gigs for $120 to use across 12 months. Kogan.com. It's clicking awesome. Just a final point on the Western Bulldogs. They fell out of love with Riley Sanders pretty quickly as well. Luke Beveridge said he's the most prepared first-year player he's ever seen, and they're sort of halfway through the third quarter, he'd fallen out of love and he was subbed out. Billy's in Ascot Vale. You want to speak about the hot topic this morning. That's the Bulldogs. What's your thoughts, Bill?
Yeah, morning, gents. Just quickly, Kane, you were just saying that Bevo said that they prepared well for this game. I don't believe that at all, because if you look at the past 6-7 times that they've played Melbourne, Gawn, Petrarca and Oliver have been their best each time they've played them. So if you've prepared well, have they done their homework over the last year or two, knowing that those players are always damaging them and doing something about it? So I just can't accept that he's saying that we prepared well for this match.
Well, the other one was the couple of centre bounce goals that they kicked from the front of the centre, so streaming out the front of the centre bounce. We'd seen that movie before as well, so that was interesting. But that was on the back of Max Gawn and his dominance in the centre bounce as well. G'day to you, Peter. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I know it's early in the season, but you can probably lock Gawn and GWS in Sydney as a definite top four. But Nathan, I worry about Collingwood. I don't think they've got much depth. I know they've got ageing players, but I surely they shouldn't have got rid of Ginnivan. I probably wish they still had him, because Lockie's been a little bit underwhelming in those first two games. But what depth has Collingwood got? I think they're in trouble.
Obviously, there's an impact to the salary cap sort of straightening up that happened a couple of years ago. I think they've always, the top half of the list is quite mature and been great over a long period of time, and they were able to, bring that to the fore and win the competition last year. I don't know exactly how the youth is looking underneath that. There's quite a few players that have been brought on the last couple of years. I don't think that any team really, has it easy to stay up there for a long period of time. There is a reliance on Pendlebury, Sidebottom and Howe for leadership and performance. That will wane at some point, and you'll need the next group of players to come through. But I don't have any fears for their depth this year. But Graham Wright's as good as any getting around, and he can probably still do it from Europe
as
well.
Isn't he?
But no, they haven't missed a beat. The Pies until these couple of weeks, and they've got a bit of work to do now. Mm.
All right, good on you, Pete. I think there's a few sharing your concerns early days with Collingwood. Players are just a year older, Bucks. The lack of depth, Murphy not there. So I think they're justified. Did you buy Tom Mitchell being rested or managed? Did you buy it, Bucks?
Look, I think they've got plenty of people through the midfield that can do what Tom Mitchell does.
So he was dropped?
I don't think he was dropped, but I think that they've got a squad mentality. There's no doubt. I don't think Tom Mitchell helps them defend.
Yeah.
And defence has been an issue for them. So what do you do this week? That's the question.
Mm. All right, Pies fans, you can have your say. Sam might be one of those. What's your thoughts on the Pies, Sam?
Morning, boys. Just quickly, it's been frustrating to watch the Pies Friday night when they've seen what we got beaten by our own game, or the one we played in 2023. And just a late submission for Pull Your Socks Up. But anyone that's been messaging Ash Johnson on Instagram, blokes deleting his Instagram because he's just been copying a piece.
Yeah, I saw that. You just on a bit of a dodgy line there. So I did see that reported that he deactivated his social media because of abuse that he was copying. And
I think one thing I would say is that when you're a professional sportsman, at some time in your career, you are going to be the target of trolls and vitriol. And it's difficult to cope with. I mean,
there's strategies to cope with it though, and that may be one of them. Just to get off it.
But for a young fellow like Ash Johnson, compared to someone like you or I, like if you've grown up with social media, you see that as your connection point. It's actually, to remove yourself from social media might actually feel like removing yourself from life.
Yeah.
So it's no good that a young person feels like that they're in that situation due to abuse that's coming through that medium. But yes, it's absolutely going to happen. If you're at the pointy end and things are going south either for you or for your team at different times, and that's going to happen over a career, you've got to be able to handle it.
All right, it's Kane and Bucks for Melbourne Airport Parking. You can book online for the best rates at melbourneairport.com.au. And we're powered by Kubota. Take on any job with Kubota's mowers, tractors and land pride attachments. We've got a lot to get through this morning. Andrew McGrath, the Essendon vice captain, is going to join us next. Sammy Edmund with all the news, questions without notice, and your calls still to come.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop
addicted to the shit. It is Kane and Bucks, and it was a very good game of football at the MCG on Saturday in really difficult conditions, good rivals, and a big crowd. And the victor is the Essendon vice captain. He joins us. Andrew McGrath is his name. Thanks to Cobram Estate, premium Australian extra virgin olive oil. Andrew, thanks for your time again.
Hey, Kane. Hey, Bucks. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Take us through the conditions, because I was watching and it was carnage, but it's what we love about the game, isn't it? When it's just back to the way that you've prepared an endurance battle, and your team looked pretty well prepared. You must have been pleased.
Yeah, it was an interesting way to start the season. Obviously, you don't
you don't always expect to play footy in 30-degree weather, but you train all off-season and pre-season for it. But after halftime, I think both teams were starting to feel the heat a little bit, and it became a little bit of an energy conserver late in the game, and we sort of tried to take a bit of the sting out of the ball movement later just to conserve some cramping and whatever else. But lucky we had the legs in the end to run over the top of them.
Talk to me about your tactics against Sicily. You clearly went after him, and then Guelphy, I thought, did an excellent job before he was moved to Stringer after half time. But he was clearly your focus.
Yeah, obviously James is a quality player. He's super important to the way they play, and I think any team scouts your opposition really thoroughly and figures out who are their key movers and what makes them tick. And obviously Guelph had a role on Sicily on the day and did a superb job, but we all feel responsible to helping him out in that role. And if that means getting under his skin a little bit, that's kind of the way footy goes, as you guys know very well. But it was really pleasing from Matt's point of view. He's done an awesome job the last couple of weeks on Stewart and Sicily, and he's a super, super important part of our team.
And he got a week for kicking you, mate. How did you see the incident?
Oh, it was pretty innocuous. I think a few of us got into him a little bit after Guelph kicked the first goal on him, and it was just one of those heat of the moment things. I didn't even really realise that he put his foot into the back of me, which sort of suggests how severe the kick was. Not very at all, but I guess they're stamping that out of the game, and we'll see where that lands.
Do you know if you will have to be present for an appeal if it takes place?
I'm not too sure, Bucks. We obviously, after every incident, our club doctor calls us to see if there's any medical ramifications or if there's any soreness. My report to him was there's nothing. I've got no bruise, no nothing. So hopefully that stands up in the appeal if there is one. But I'm not too sure how that works.
Well, we'll sit back like you and see how it takes place. One player that I reckon it must be an absolute joy to play with is Nick Martin. It just seems like Zach Merritt has always been that type of player, great distributor, knows the game inside out. Nick seems to me like someone who just makes the right decisions all the time, and I presume he must communicate really well out there. His first couple of years in the system have been excellent.
Yeah, Nick's super. You sometimes forget his age and experience in the game. Like you said, he sees it extremely well, uses the ball as good as any in the league, and he's just a real calm personality out on the field. Like, you can communicate with him at any point in time, and you know you're going to get a really reasonable response, and he's a joy to play with. Obviously, I spend a bit of time with him down back at the moment, and I'm really enjoying building that synergy with him, and he's just super. I think he's going to go from strength to strength this season.
Andy, where's your grunt come from in your team? Like, you've obviously been in the position you've been in for a long time in your entire career, yet to play or to play in a winning final. Where's that couple of percent going to come from? That real edge in competitiveness. You know, is it from across the group? Is there a player in particular that you're looking to that sets the standard in that? What's the difference between where you've been and where you want to go?
Yeah, I think, Bucks, to be completely honest, it's probably a whole group thing. And I think Brad's pushing that really strongly, that we're all responsible for where we're heading, and we all need to buy in wholeheartedly. And I think on the weekend we showed a lot of passion, we showed a lot of competitiveness, which is all you can ask for as, I guess, the leader of our club, and all Brad wants to see, really. There was some critical moments late in the game with chase down tackles. I think there was an added level of physicality across the board, but we all feed off each other in that element, and I think across the board we all need to raise our water level a little bit in that space and push each other to greater heights. But I don't think it lands on one single person, but we all feed off each other.
Speaking of Andrew McGrath, the Essendon vice-captain, off the back of their win against Hawthorn in round one, Draper and Goldstein fascinates me. Clearly, the standout aspect of your game was the 10 goals from stoppages, so well done to Todd there, but you're going to have to get Draper back in pretty soon. Andrew, how does that work?
Yeah, I think it's a good problem to have. We've got two, even three quality ruckmen with Nick Bryan waiting in the ranks as well, and young Vigo Vizentini learning and growing every day. But I think Brad's been known to play two rucks. We did it numerous times last year, and I'm not a coach, so it's not my job to fit them into the side. But
like I said before, it's an awesome problem to have. And if we can get them both firing in the same team, we should have real dominance in the ruck moving forward.
Got to say, Reid, in the brief period that he played, looked good. He's a terrific ball user from what I could see. But there's a hamstring issue there. Have you got an update?
I haven't yet. He had scans yesterday just to figure it out. I'm on the way to the club this morning, so I'll find out pretty shortly. But he's super important to what we do. I think it was shattering to see him go out of the game early. Like you said, he was looking really good. He's had a really tough run of injury, and he really complements the rest of our backs and really helps Ben McKay in what he does. And yeah, it was just shattering to see him hurt himself again. Hopefully it's not too serious, but like you said, he's a really important cog in what we want to do, and fingers crossed it's not too bad.
We saw your forward line stand up, and you know, obviously the kicker over 100, it's a winning score. It's a chance to really put your opposition to the sword. It wasn't just Jake Stringer. It was Langford, who's been consistent for you over a long period of time. Jade Gresham drops into it. You must have confidence going into that forward line that you've got three or four targets that can hurt with their skill set.
Yeah, it's super exciting to look up the field and see one-on-ones that are favourable for us. It was a focus going into game to give them a chance. We always back our front six against their back six. And to see them go to work in a lot of one-on-one situations and come out on top, and also the spread of goal kickers is really pleasing for us as well. Obviously, Jake was the standout on the day, but all our forwards popped up in moments, and we looked really potent down there, which is exciting.
How does your review work? How does a modern football club now review that performance, win or lose, on the weekend?
Yeah, I think win or loss, it's really consistent. Brad's been super at that. Like, we obviously learn a hell of a lot from every single game, and no team's a finished product by any means at this point of the year. So we'll head in this morning. The coaches do a lot of their heavy lifting over the weekend and this morning. So we get our physical stuff done, and then sort of midway through the day, we get into our team review, followed by lines and individual reviews over the next 48 hours. But like I said before, it's very forward-thinking. We start to plan for Sydney this weekend very quickly, and we move on from the result. But we also learn from the things that went really well and the things that didn't look so good on our end, and just get back on the grind. I think it's the unwritten rule about AFL. Everyone sees the weekend results and looks at the ladder, but day-to-day we just need to keep getting better.
Good on you, mate. Stack of the footy, as always. A lot of bounces as well. You love bouncing the footy. The most prolific bouncer in the competition, if you don't mind, Bucks. Congratulations, mate, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
It was a great day at the MCG. The 84 Premiership team were recognised. A lap of honour. I thought it was just, man, we should do more of that. We should do more in footy clubs. I thought the Bombers just celebrated that perfectly. So they will take on Sydney at the SCG, probably the toughest task in football at the moment. Andrew McGrath there for Cobram Estate, Australia's most awarded extra virgin olive oil grown, harvested, and first coal pressed in Northern Victoria.
Should do more of that, like flag unveilings. It's amazing how we get critical in some places, but then wrap it up in others. Winning and losing is all the difference.
But I think if the Bombers still lost, we're still not saying, gee, that was in poor taste, the way that they celebrated the 84 Premiership heroes.
Yeah, no, good point.
All right, Andrew McGrath, our guest.
A sports news update for Club Tokemwal, Australia's premier Murray River golfing destination, with two top 40 golf courses. Talk to the golf package team today.
The best in the business, SEN's chief reporter. Thanks to Club Tokemwal and the Murray, your next golfing holiday. Sammy, good morning.
Kane, Bucks, great to be with you. What a start. To think the two grand final sides could be zip. And two. Hey, we've got two teams having a bye this weekend when after the comps only played one match. And record crowd for a single round, 413,405 through the gates in round one, the biggest round in the history of the game. So maybe a bit of FOMO kicking in for those sets of supporters who miss out on opening round.
Yeah, but it was a big round one, no doubt about it. And as always, the MRO is a big talking point.
No, well, it was always going to be fascinating, Kane, the moment that Mason Redmond clashed with John Newcombe at the MCG. Now, he's been offered a one-match ban for that incident that was assessed as intentional, low impact and high contact. Now, the flaky explanation that justifies the difference between George Hewitt getting off for punching Lachie Neal and Mason Redmond getting a week, in the AFL's view, is that Hewitt was at the contest. Now, they had a couple of goes at this, the AFL. One of the excuses was that the contact slipped high from George Hewitt. The other one was that it was quite unquote at the contest and therefore deemed careless. Redmond's off the ball and therefore intentional. Jeez, at the risk of repeating myself, George Hewitt incredibly lucky to have gotten off that, given it's a dead ball situation. They're waiting for a ball up. So Essendon, as we sit here this morning, giving some consideration to challenging this one. On the face of it, it's going to be hard to escape, but when you go back to only opening round with George Hewitt, maybe they've got a case.
Oh, I see it the other way, Sammy. I don't think Hewitt was lucky. I just think that Redmond is unlucky. I don't think that they're part of a concussion issue, even though there's, you know, contact to high contact. But Redmond's arm actually deflects off Newcomb's shoulder, yep, as well. So I don't think you can say it's intentional that he struck him high.
Yeah, well, when it's off the ball, it inevitably is. And the AFL is... change the tribunal rules in this space. We've reported this many times, but they do state now that when a player intends to, and I'm quoting them here, forcefully push or fend an opposition player off the ball, and the effect is that that player strikes their opponent, then the strike will usually be graded as intentional rather than careless. So that's the way the rule is written, and that's why George Hewitt, I think, was very fortunate to have escaped. Because did he mean to get him in the head? Maybe not, but he did strike him at the end of the day, didn't he, Buck? So, look, we can debate the MRO until the cows come home, but I wonder whether Essendon will give thought to challenging that. And then we've got James Sicily, the kick on Andy McGrath, who you had on earlier. Look, the victim in this situation is generally going to play it down under the player code. We clearly don't want this in the game, but that was adjudged intentional, of course, but medium impact. So low impact and to the body would have been a fine. So getting it up to medium gives it a week. So another watch there, potentially, where the Hawthorn will challenge that medium grading, albeit kicking is something that's generally, as it should be, greatly frowned upon in the game.
For those that are just joining us, the player who was kicked was with us moments ago, and here's how he saw the incident.
It was pretty innocuous. I think a few of us got into him a little bit after Guelph kicked the first goal on him, and it was just one of those heat-of-the-moment things. I didn't even really realise that he put his foot into the back of me, which sort of suggests how severe the kick was. Not very at all, but I guess they're stamping that out of the game, and we'll see where that lands.
So, Hawthorn, you have our permission to use that audio and take it to the tribunal. What's the process now to challenge a finding like this, Sammy? The AFL have made it a bit more expensive now, is it?
Yeah, it is a bit more expensive. Yeah, they don't want as many tribunal cases as they had last year, is cutting a long story short, Kane. So, yeah, it's a bit more expensive to challenge. The avenue is absolutely there, as it's always been, for Hawthorn to do so. And that determination will need to be made by about midday today from the Hawks. So we'll watch this space on that.
Medical rooms busy on Monday morning at AFL clubs across the weekend.
Yeah, some heartbreakers over the weekend too. Bookended by Josh Gibkiss, the season-ending ACL. And we hope that Oscar McDonald hasn't suffered in what was a very similar mechanism, wasn't it? And gone down the same path there, given the former Demon, the former Blue, has worked so hard for another chance, hasn't he? He's got it over at Fremantle. Nasty knee injury scans this morning over there on that. And then there's Brennan Cox, who that could be really serious, that hamstring. And certainly listening to Justin Longmuir post-game, they are fearful this could be a long-termer. So scans on that as well. And then that's a defensive problem for Fremantle to work through, as it is for North Melbourne. And anyone who's ruptured an Achilles tendon will know what Josh Goda went through in that loss to GWS. So North, they've got to keep rebuilding this defence on the run there, don't they? Lost Ben McKay to free agency, Griffin Logue rehabbing the ACL, and now the Josh Goda Achilles. They're going to have to keep rebuilding on the run there in that back six.
Some of those young players look good, though. Dawson was good. Pink had a baptism of fire. He got caught out a few times, but I liked their endeavour. But, yeah, terrible when you see full-season injuries early in the season like that.
Shoegate with Grant Myers, Sammy. How'd you see it?
I'm not sure if either of you two have seen fit to throw a boot around the footy field, but Grine did it to Rowan Marshall, of course, the second quarter down at GMHBA Stadium. Now, the umpire stopped the play, ordered the ball back to the boundary umpire who was showing in at the time, and then firmly instructed Marshall to get his shoe back on. But should he have also penalised Myers and paid a free kick? Because history says he should have. Charlie Cameron was at the Gabba in 2022. He piffed a shoe, was penalised. Jeremy Cameron was actually paid a 50-metre penalty against when he threw a shoe a few years ago when he was playing for GWS. I reckon the umpire missed a trick here. I think it should have been a free kick paid to the Saints.
Yeah, I haven't read the rule book and what it states in relation to throwing personal equipment on the field, but if that's the case and there's four umpires out there, maybe they missed one. Speaking of umpiring decisions, I thought the most debated decision was the Dangerfield Stocker contact below the knees one on Saturday night. Was it the right call, Sammy?
Oh, these ones are so hard, aren't they, to judge? I think so, Kane, but I mean, I'm flipping a coin there because these ones are always debated and for good reason, I think. I think we can tip too far the other way, can't we? And the reason the rule that was brought in is admirable. But I think when you start to really take away from the player winning the ball and making the ball his priority at the expense of a player potentially second to it, then we've got a problem. But we're splitting hairs, I think. What did you think?
Well, he's an experienced player who allowed himself to run into that contact and dropped a knee in the process, mind you, to draw the free kick.
You thought he milked it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what was Liam Stocker expected to do in that instance? Like pull out of the contest, not go to the contest? Well, keep his feet would be the question, but all he was doing was tapping it to a teammate who was in a better position.
It's not in the spirit of the way that the rule should be adjudicated.
And so Stocker's out of the game for the rest of the game.
Yeah, the rule came in for, I think Adam Goods was doing, sliding in with your knees.
Gary Rowan.
To play lower legs. Now, that was a player with his focus solely on the football, and I think you're right, Bucks. I think Dangerfield is smart, and I think he milked the free kick, and no one likes to see players taking advantage of a rule like that. Hey, you got some contract news out of the Western Bulldogs?
Yeah, Tom Liberatore closing in quickly on another contract extension out there, Kane. He's poised to sign a one-year deal, so that'll carry him through until the end of the 2025 season. He did, this time last year, sign a 12-month extension as well. Closing in on 32 years of age now. He started his 13th season. Well, he was excellent yesterday, wasn't he, in a losing side. The vice-captain this year, so 9 years from his last formal leadership role at the Witten Oval. So the resume is glittering. He just keeps signing these one-year contract extensions, and they need a few more of him out there at the moment.
Mm. You reckon McRae's gettable, Sammy? Like, I know there's injury, but clearly he's out of favour with the voting in the leadership group, not vice captain anymore. What is it, 2026 or 7 that his contract runs to? I think there's a couple of clubs that would be interested there, wouldn't they?
Yeah, maybe. Signed a big contract. Now, this is just me speculating. I haven't asked the question. I'd be really surprised. I think he's a one-clubber. Bailey Smith, I'd say, he's definitely going to be on the move. Again, just speculating. I'd be reluctant to think that the Dogs would have allowed Zach McRae to go. And also, not sure Jack McRae, albeit with the disappointment that you mentioned being removed from the leadership, would seek a move. I think he'll be back in the side at the next time of asking. And, I can't see him moving in the off-season.
Mm. All right. Now, a lot happening in Tassie today with a big announcement.
Yeah, we'll be on air tonight, won't we, on Sports Day, of course, for this announcement when the identity of the Tasmanian Football Club is known. Certainly be the Devils, you'd think. Hopefully the strip is close to the iconic Tasmanian strip from that we've seen over the journey as well. But the colours, the logo, the name, everything going to be revealed today across the country. The countless live sites down there. There's an event at Marvel Stadium as well. Streams begin at 5:45 Eastern time today on the AFL website. So history-making announcement for Tassie, and now we just need the election to play ball next weekend.
All right, speaking of Tassie, finally, the NBL, they were a bit disappointing, the Jack Jumpers.
Oh, they got smacked around, didn't they? 104-81. Well, gee, the NBL and Melbourne United as well, in the case of yesterday, put on a great show. Game one, great entertainment. Took the family along, boys. We had a ball down there. Game two, Hobart, Friday. Game three returns to John Cain Arena. Might well be the one where United look to secure another title under Dean Vickham, and that's Sunday afternoon. So 1-0 United. Best of 5-game series, of course, in the NBL.
The best to do it. SEN's chief reporter, thanks to Club Tokemore on the Murray. Your next golfing holiday, you'll hear him across the SEN network right throughout the day. Sammy, thanks for your time.
Thanks, lad.
Let's go to Mark in South Melbourne. Mark, we've touched on the umpiring at the Cattery, I should say. What were your thoughts?
I just think some of the umpiring decisions when you go down there as an opposition side, it's against you. The one also that you guys sort of haven't brought up is Riley Bonner when he tapped the ball into from a short distance into the behind, like behind post, and they said that he, you know, that rule that they gave him the opposition a free kick. Some of the marks and killer players weren't given, and it's an uphill battle. And I think throwing the bloody shoe off, that should have been a free kick instantly. And, you know, I'm really proud of the efforts of the Saints. And what are your thoughts? What does St Kilda need for the midfield to get better? Because we just look like we lacked a lot of speed on the weekend.
Yeah, the midfield's probably the Saints' biggest challenge. It was always a hard first game up to be scheduled, you know, to play Geelong down there. You know, the opening of the stand, there's a fair bit that was going for the Cats on the evening, but I think defensively, Ross has put that team in pretty good shape. They're going to be hard to beat, and I think they've slowly added sort of bits to their puzzle. The midfield's where it's at. You know, Steele and Crouch are one pace players, but they're very good inside. You're trying to add a little bit of run around that. You've got Wanganeen Miller off the back. You know, Liam Henry coming up from a high forward role. I think it's just going to take a little bit to settle. But yeah, the midfield's the main one. Sinclair's going to be important as well.
Can we just say that the umpiring didn't decide that game? When you've got plus 19 entries, the Saints only went in 44 times. If they had won that game, I think even Ross and the St Kilda coaches would have admitted that they would have stolen that
one. Yeah, and even the late. Yeah, it was too little too late. And that's you can't afford to let an opposition get out that far.
Geelong, clearly the better side. You can have your say on umpiring.
Better say qualitative, please.
Did not decide the game.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop with addicted to the shanty. Questions without notice. For Aussies living life on the go, Signet phone accessories go the distance, keeping you connected and protected.
All right, you got one for us. Let us know. For Signet, for Aussies living life on the go, Signet phone accessories go the distance, keeping you connected and protected. Why is Andrew Gaff still playing at the level?
Oof. You picked him as one that was going to jump up, an old player that was going to his thing.
I had a discussion with one of the West Coast assistant coaches at the Port Adelaide reunion, and he said, he's going really well. But he's not. He's washed up, and he's had more free games given to him in the last 2 years than any other player, perhaps in history. So him and Darling, are they that hard up that they can't find a younger player to take their spot? They should not be playing at the level.
It is one of the – like, that is – one of the mysteries of the world. How does Andrew Gaff, who's knocked up getting 30 touches, yeah, it would have been harder for him not to get 30 than to get 30 through the middle five or six years of his career.
On a hot day where the game is more suited to him than ever.
Well, why wouldn't you just play him off half back if he's a good left foot user?
Bucks, just don't play.
I get it.
Like, there needs to be some selection integrity, regardless of where you're at as a footy club.
They've had a
full off season to replenish the list and find some players to take this. I know he's get paid a lot of money, but let's not pick players who don't deserve to be picked.
You should have greeted our hats to me then. Do not talk over me. he should be dropped. He should be because
he's dropped.
He's giving very little, and there's got to be, if you're not going to give and perform as a senior player, let alone, you've got to do your job first and then help other young kids do theirs. But you're right, but they don't have a lot, so they need all of these players stepping up. The fact that he can have a round one performance like that is he must be shot, like confident shot.
No, he's washed up. I looked at so Barras 4 touches, Gaff 4 touches subbed out, Darling 4 touches, Petricelli is an experienced player, 8 touches, Oscar Allen was awful, 9 and didn't hit the scoreboard. Like, so these Waterman, nothing. These are the players that are vital for West Coast because of the inexperience and the youth around them. Your senior players have to play well. And once again, they were poor. The team laid 35 tackles. Port Adelaide had 40 scoring shots from 57 entries, and it was the same old. And, yep, the scoreboard flooded them because Port Adelaide kicked 16-24.
They scored from 70% of their entries, Port. I wouldn't be using tackles as a stat too much. No, GWS still had five in the first quarter against Collingwood. They kicked five goals. Yeah, they had four in the first quarter. Tackles are down. Last year, tackles were at 60 average. This year they're at 50, so watch this space with how important tackles become.
I understand that, but Port Adelaide still laid 9 more tackles than West Coast, and they had nearly 80 more disposals.
1,000 more disposals. Yeah. Daniel Houston, did you rate his first game?
Gee whiz. Now, you've been big on Dan Houston for a long time. I sit alongside of you in the All-Australian meeting, and I know how highly you rate him, but let's start putting Dan Houston in. I mean, you're elite if you're All-Australian, but let's start really putting him to the peak of where the talent levels lie in the competition. He was enormous. Again, not his biggest numbers in terms of disposals, but maximum impact, 10 score involvements, plays anywhere. I thought he was huge. You got a question without notice?
Yeah. Where do you rate Jesse Hogan in key forwards right now?
Without just plucking my list off the top of my head, he'd be in the top 5 key forwards in the league right now, wouldn't he?
He has to be. He's been in the best players the first two rounds. Now, obviously, a key forward relies on his supply, but his movement's been great. His sticky hands late last year. He's finishing a lot better. He's up and about. He looks as fit and as organised as he's been. Like, what a stayer he has been throughout his career, and he's in the best form that he's ever been.
I haven't touched much on the Adelaide Football Club. Before I ask you a question without notice, let's have a listen to their coach, Matthew Nix. Clearly, he was disappointed.
Yep. I mean, we always believe. So we had our chances, but the first half, we didn't look like scoring, which was disappointing.
8-2 on the road. Sorry, 2-8 on the road last year. They lost 5 games by under 10 points, and they missed the finals by the snick of a goalpost.
I think that this is, if I was Matty Nix and a leader at the Adelaide Football Club, even on field, I would be filthy. I would be absolutely filthy.
Why?
With ourselves. Because they came home late. You know, they opened the game up late. Yeah, they got a handle on the conditions late, potentially. We've got to give the Suns credit because the defensive, the contest and defense were really strong and the conditions were challenging. But the reason I'm filthy is because it's the same all over again. Close losses, almost, things going against us. I think this could be the making of Adelaide. Because I'm big on them. I really like what they do. I like what they bring. I think their top end is excellent. I just reckon if they're going to be anything as a team and as a club, the review on this game will be ruthless, should be ruthless on the things that they can control that they didn't control, because we've lost another close game, another brave effort. But that's going to get you absolutely nowhere as a team, as a club. And so it could be the very best thing that could ever happen to them. Or it could just be a continuation of the same. It's their choice to where they go from
here. And I touched on their leadership group. You mentioned leaders there. The 15 people in the leadership group, here's the performance of some of them. Fogarty was awful.
Quiet.
The worst game
he's
played in a long, tough conditions.
Yes.
Keys plays his role, but 9 touches, kicked a couple of important goals, but not a whole lot. Lockie Murphy, didn't see Lockie out there, didn't really see Wayne Miller. I had a bit of the footy. O'Brien was beaten by Witt. So if you're going to have 1 million people in the leadership group and you're a leader, play well. For goodness sake, your job is to play well, and their leaders, to your point,
yes,
let them down.
Can't argue. That's a full toss on leg stump.
And just the other one on Adelaide, you wanted the prime time exposure because you complained about missing the finals for an umpiring decision, and rightly so. So you're going to get a stack of Thursdays, and you are on the prime time stage on Friday night against a good opposition in Geelong. You want to play well when all eyes are on you.
Sharman boots it out. It'll come back. Dangerfield to finish it off in front of a capacity crowd at GMHBA Stadium. Floats it up. Floating. Oh, captain, my captain! He silenced the Saints and won it for the Cats. Patrick Dangerfield, you star.
Oh, very nicely done by AFL Nation's John Donohoe. Captured the moment beautifully with Patrick Dangerfield going, okay, I'm going to take this moment on myself and win this game off my own boot. When he had some other options, questions without notice, if you were coaching that situation, did he do the right thing to have a shot with 40 seconds left, knowing that if he misses, you give the Saints one more opportunity?
No, absolutely.
The right thing?
You've got to take the game where it's there to be taken. And especially when you've got that distance in you. And it only just faded in, didn't it? But I think if you're going to be a winner in anything, you've got to be prepared to take that risk. If you're... I do remember... similar circumstance. There was an 0-2 qualifying final against Brisbane, and we were 7 or 8 points up against Brisbane late in the game. Alan Didak had the ball from an out of bounds in the full 40 metres out from goal.
I remember that now.
I went across to him. I said, "Mate, take all the time you can, and then just put it at the top of the goal square." He goes, "Nah." and I've gone, okay. I said, go kick it then. And he did.
And then he turned to the crowd, didn't he? And he did this little shimmy after. Yeah.
Yeah, and with the
one of my absolute favourites, Alan Dyer.
Oh, he's a ripper.
He's so good.
It was like trying to ask a cat to be a dog. Yeah. Like, Dids was always going to take that moment. And he believed in himself. I mean, I knew that he could kick the goal as well, but I thought, let's try and soak it up.
Mm.
But... and winners, and guys that'll take the risk will always take the risk, and so they should.
You were going to ask me, but I'm going to steal it.
Yeah.
Of the players who played their first game, first-year players, debutants, who's going to have the biggest career?
Yeah, I really like the look of Dersma for North. He's a lanky young fella.
You said during the call he reminds you of Fife.
Did you see that?
Yeah, he floated across the front of the pack and plucked that ball out of the air.
There's not many. There's a lot of us, but what Nat Fife turned into was so different to what he first came into the competition at. So I'm not talking about what Nat Fife is now. What he was when he first started was like a Matty Lappin type, and Matty Lappin's probably the other guy that does this, like a 6'2", lanky, who plays well on the ground. But the difference that float across the front of packs, reading the ball so well, and then being at the highest point before anyone else. Mm. He's already shown elements of that through practice matches and on the weekend. He finishes really well. He missed a shot that he would be kicking himself about, but he finishes really well. I know that this would be happening, but you hope that his coaches are encouraging him to keep going for his aerial, because if you have that in your game as a midfielder, if he turns into an inside midfielder for a winger needs aerial massively, and he's already got that. But there's something about him.
I was actually jealous of that opinion. I was like, Buck said Nat Fife. I was like, that's it.
That's exactly what he did.
Well, you can just Google Nat Fife and you can see what he looked like when he first came in. But
what number did he? Okay, it wasn't seven.
I can't remember what number he wore. I'm hopeless with numbers. But the other, if the model of his career, I don't think it's let's go midfield, and that can happen, and that may happen in time. But the model of his career should be let's be Toby Green for Dersma.
You reckon?
Let's be not in terms of exactly the same type. He's a bit taller, and he's maybe got a bit more finesse than what Toby Green has got. But if you can be a 50 goal medium forward for the rest, you're in the Australian Football Hall of Fame forever. So
I'll temper that. Like a Mitch Georgiades, he's got aerial, but he hasn't got other parts of his game. You go forward of the ball, it is the toughest position to play. So what Toby Green is doing is what makes him so elite, because not many players can survive just playing in the front six and it being expected to do that for 100% of your game time. I mean, the easiest position to play is off halfback. You can see guys off halfback. And Salem went back there on the weekend, and that's his best spot. You're going to get the ball 25, 30 times. You don't even need to work hard. as long as you're a good user, you'll be right. So what Colby McKerch is doing is great. He's a good young talent and he uses the ball well. But Dersma through the midfield and across half forward is going to have more impactful touches. But he needs to be shared across the ground to let him develop.
Gunston's done it for a long time. Bruce has done it for a lot. Like Fritch is doing it for a long time. Like so, I think you know you are a rare beast if you can do it. But if you can, you are that valuable to your team, and he will be that. So I don't disagree with what you said about Dersma.
Yours?
You do love him. Look, I think Harley Reid's going to be the best. That's the obvious one. But I really like the fact that they just gone, okay, halfback you mentioned, we could put you at a halfback, and there's been talk of that. We're going to start you in the midfield. Yep. And he's just, to me, he's just made of the right stuff. There was one moment there where he ran through someone. It was Todd Marshall, and I thought, geez, there's a bit of aggression there. There's a nice level of arrogance, positive arrogance, I think, with him. And then Dixon came across put him at the ground.
It's just competitiveness.
Yeah,
just...
but there's a bit of, you know, he knows he's good, and I think that's healthy. And I think it's not over the top. So, you know, in time, when he's in a good football team, and I feel sorry for him, the team that he is in, I think he's going to be pretty special. This is our conversation starters for the Drain Man. Block drains, call the experts, the Drain Man. Drain relining is the long-term solution to rehabilitate your assets.
5-4-13 as a young player. He just
13!
Very quick. No, there's elements of that. The other one is Heaney, who's a stronger version of that. Will Day is another one who had that aerial is now going to go in the midfield. We've got some exciting players that are going to have great careers, and they'll have their hard days, but it's going to be great to watch.
1-300-736-736. Which young player are you most excited about? Visit Mimosa Homes today. There's a new show on Channel 9 last night, The Footy Furnace, and I can't say that I stayed up to watch it, but they do a great job of clipping up the best bits on social media, and it looked good, and it would be good because this man is involved, and he had another thought on the Pies.
Well, I guess you go on your own values, and I think sitting through watching the lovely memory of winning a grand final, I'm talking the players, the people inside the white line, not the fans and that kind of thing, that you've got to be able to put it behind sort of last year. I mean, it's a lovely memory, but you've got to get yourself into the present, and sitting in the picture theatre watching your 23 grand final, I thought, no, my players wouldn't be doing that if I was coach, for instance. Now, Craig McRae might not have had the option because sometimes the marketing team overrides what the coach thinks. So I'm not quite sure exactly what Craig thinks, but that was my thinking first and foremost. But bottom line, they've started the season really badly. They're playing badly. Now, the premiership hangover thing's a bit of just a word, really, but doesn't matter now what you were going into round one or opening round. Now, with two losses down, they've got a little bit of making up to do.
Do you agree or disagree?
Well, firstly, I love Lee. Like he just gets the point across in a
matter of
with
fact,
a very matter of fact. Yeah, you know, doesn't need a lot of words to do it. He's awesome, and the way he shared that those thoughts are spot on. I would have thought, and the point that he made there, did Craig McRae have any say on it? We think the senior coach here sits above and outside of Ross, maybe, and maybe Lee back in the day. Like, you don't – there are so many other stakeholders. So I understand exactly where he's coming from. It's like, I don't know, if you were playing Essendon in the second half of the year and you're beating them in Anzac Day, would you show highlights of that and celebrate your Anzac Day win? It's not the best preparation because there's still a job to do. So.
Haven't they done that, though – right the way through Collingwood? Like, haven't they enjoyed their little or big wins right along the way? So
yeah, no doubt.
Would it be any different?
They're just not playing as well. As you said, they're just playing badly. So it's not about the premiership hangover. It's just that they've lost two games of football and they've got some questions to ask themselves about, you know, what are the fundamentals of what is going to make us the best version of us in 2024? Now, there might be some elements of 23 that will be part of that, but what are we going to prioritise, our offence or our defence? Now, Craig McRae's always been a very attacking, like let's make a mistake being aggressive, but you can be aggressive in defence as well, but the balance just isn't quite there. So the coaching group and Craig McRae got to work out, okay, where are we going to, what are we going to double down on here and make sure that that becomes a really strong element? Is it the forward press? Are we going to slow our ball movement down just a little bit down the back to be able to get more players in front of the ball and try and hold field position a little bit more? That they're going to be the fascinating parts of the next couple of weeks for Collingwood against St Kilda on Thursday night and then Brisbane the week after.
Yeah, big fortnight for the Pies. All right, let's fly through a couple of your calls before we hand the microphone over. Michael, you want to speak about the young player debate we just had?
Yes, Aston Moir from the Blues. I've heard a lot of good things about him. He doesn't really have a natural foot. He can kick both sides very, very well. There's a lot of talk about him. He's got Kudu's number. So I've heard lots of good things about him. So I can't wait.
Look forward to seeing him run around. Let's go to Coburg and speak to Joe. Joe, I asked Bucks the question, why is Andrew Gaff still playing? Have you got a thought?
Oh, g'day, boys. Yeah, look, there's no way he would retire. I mean, the list managers have got a case to answer here when they're signing, you know, 33, 34-year-old to back-ended contracts where they're going to earn $700,000-$800,000. Why would you retire?
No, I wasn't asking him to retire. I was asking the question why the coaches keep picking him. He can still play waffle. And that he can still be there on the list and being a senior voice around the group, or they can delist him and they can pay him out and cop the hit, or they can just not pick him. I think the latter would be wise.
There's no doubt. I mean, he must have earned his position. You can't pick
a
player.
Well, he hasn't, but you can't say that, Bucks, because
no, he
hasn't, because you're smart enough, you've watched enough footy, you've coached, to see him play over the last 18 months ago.
No. I'm not talking about 18 months ago. I'm talking about through pre-season, over the last month in practice games, and I haven't seen a lot of West Coast. He must have earned his position. You don't select a guy who's not in your
they
best
do.
23.
They continually...
Well, that's everything that's wrong with West Coast, if
100%,
that's what's
happening. And that's what I'm questioning. I'm questioning their selection integrity. And I think you do factor in the last 12 months. You clearly do. It's a body of work. It's not just clean slate, start again at pre-season. You've got to factor that in. Otherwise, no one would ever get
Well, it's not a great
listed.
Start to the year.
It's shocking. And
a bit of a raw nerve here.
He's not alone. Mm. Jack Darling's in the same boat. It's got a Werribee inspector, Jace. G'day, Jace.
Hi, how are you guys? Just one thing I noticed with the Collingwood and the Sydney game, the Collingwood supporters were booing the Swans players every time they touched the ball in the first quarter. I've never heard that before in every game that I've watched. Like, I've never seen anything like it. And by three quarter, they're all gone.
Buck, don't get Buck started on booing, Jace. Come on, we got through nearly unscathed this morning. John's in Norwood, one of our favourites. G'day to you, Johnny. You want to speak about Freo?
I want to speak about Justin Longmire. I just think what an incredible performance by him and his players, and especially young Sarong. I think he had about 44 touches.
Yep.
People wanted to bag Justin during the week. I think he's a really quality man, and Nathan would know more about him to speak about him.
John, thank you for your call and for that acknowledgement. I think there's been a character assassination happen with JL.
You think that is too harsh a term?
No, because people are saying, you know, the team play uninspiring football and they're not adventurous, and you know the coach needs to take responsibility because he's a dull guy and he's like that. That's the language and the commentary that I've heard from not just one, you know, expert.
Is it
a
reasonable observation that you want your coach to be an inspiration?
I can understand where it comes from, but it's only there because the performance hasn't been there. But you're talking about, you're attributing the attributes of an individual that you don't know. We're only seeing the outside. If you saw the playing group and the internal environment of the club when the announcement of his 1 year contract.
But they're hardly going to boo, are they?
No, I understand that. But it wasn't just a "we're happy for you." It was a second when there's some idiot in the playing group who always does that and he has a second rouser. But there was a good feel amongst it then. And they won. That helps. But I agree with that caller, and you know, JL can be a really solid character and inspire without having to be a rah-rah guy.